Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
My name is Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and welcome to today's podcast. I'm with Chris Barrow today, who I don't think needs any introduction, and what we're going to be just exploring is his latest views on the theme of marketing and how practices can get more patients.
So what I'm noticing out there amongst the best practices is that, like I said, we can go into a list of tactics in a minute, but I want to talk first of all about their strategy as far as marketing is concerned. And I want to focus specifically on three things that separate the winners from the losers, and those things are time, money, and people. And it has been said by pundits that those three resources are necessary in any business, kind of self-evident. Problem in marketing is that marketing isn't effective in a dental practice if somebody doesn't allocate sufficient time to be focused on the subject of marketing, if the practice doesn't allocate sufficient financial resources, and I'll talk about what I believe to be sufficiency in financial allocation, and also, of course, they don't allocate uninterrupted time to some of the people in the practice so that they can focus on that activity. You can't do marketing and answer the phone. You can't do marketing and meet and greet at a front desk. You can't do marketing in between patients. You can't do marketing at lunchtime. And perhaps most importantly of all, you can't do marketing at 8:30 at night on your dining room table with half a bottle of Merlot inside you. It just doesn't work. It's got to be a serious, dedicated activity. So the first strategic point I want to make is that practices who succeed at marketing make the appropriate allocation of those three resources. So let's talk about that allocation. There's a bit of a Chris Barrow rule coming here, and it's based on experience and intuition. Don't ask me to prove it. But I think that for every 500,000 or so of turnover in a practice, you need to allocate a full day a week. So let's say one day per week for every 500,000 of turnover, and a person is fully dedicated to the activity of marketing the practice for that day. 1 million turnover, 2 days a week, 2 million turnover, 4 days a week, and so on. The second aspect is the financial allocation. How much money, and I get this question all the time over email or at conferences, and the question is, how much financial resources should I allocate? My answer has consistently for 20 years been 5% of turnover. So if you're a £500,000 practice, you've got to be investing 25 grand into marketing, and that does not include the salary or consultancy costs of any employee or external consultant that you might hire to do some stuff. That's pure marketing allocation. £1 million practice, 50 grand a year. £2 million practice, 100 grand a year into marketing. And perhaps no surprise to say that a normal day at work for me is to find £1 million practice that are spending a lot less money than that on marketing, and then they're wondering why they're not getting the results. So strategically, let's kind of top and tail it: time, money, people. People, by the way, is a member of the team who's got that full day a week or 2 days a week to do nothing else but. And I'm going to betray a preference for having a salaried employee in the marketing team rather than trying to offset all the work to an agency or a freelancer, because that person who's a member of the team, and we perhaps get to this later in the conversation, that person who's a member of the team is going to be able to interface with the rest of the team on a day-to-day basis to look for the backstories in the patient database, because it's those backstories, it's those patients that are coming to the end of treatment and are getting a great result that are going to form the marketing collateral that marketing person is then going to say, okay, well, John Smith's getting to the end of his treatment today. Let's make sure that somebody has an end of treatment conversation with John, and let's make sure that we get reviews. Let's make sure that we get testimonial. Let's make sure that John perhaps is prepared to take part in a video to talk about his experience. So you need somebody on site to do that. An external agency can't do it.
And with that kind of person, when you've come across people that are particularly good at that, what sort of common traits do they have? What's their backgrounds?
Great question. I've developed this kind of phrase. It's a bit of a cliche, but I'll use it anyway, which is that the people who should be involved in marketing in your practice are the people whose nature it is to get involved in marketing in your practice. And so let's use the word gregarious as a nice one to describe the characteristics of that person. But that might be a gregarious 20-year-old trainee nurse, or it might be a gregarious 55-year-old associate, or it might be a gregarious receptionist. I don't mind. What I don't want to do is to have the job of trying to train people who aren't gregarious to do marketing, because marketing is a gregarious activity. And what you're doing is you're not giving somebody a list of protocols to follow. You're actually asking them to change their nature. Yeah. And anybody who's been in management will know that's the hardest thing that you could possibly ask to do. So when I'm working with a client for the first time on marketing, one of my very first questions is, who are the outgoing people in the practice? And one of the things that I've done, give you an example, I work with a practice, and I know they won't mind me saying this, a business called Genesis Dental Care, which is a micro corporate up in Derbyshire. And they've got 11 locations. And one of the things that we're doing is that in each of those locations, we're finding out who the marketing champion is. And that's whoever's got the human nature. So what I'm doing slowly but surely is I'm putting a team together of what's ultimately going to be 11 marketing champions, from one from each location. There are all sorts of shapes and sizes and ages and job description, but they're all gregarious. And it's an absolute joy to work with those people and say, right, let's start looking for patient testimonials. Let's start looking for reviews. And they just go, right, okay. Instead of going, what are we doing that for? And I haven't got time to do this. And anyway, I don't like asking and that type of thing. So I just want to work with people whose nature it is to do it.
Yeah, makes sense. Perfect sense.
So I suppose what we need to do, you know, for the sake of the listeners to this podcast, is that we need to talk about some tactics. First things first, I like to establish an order of preference in terms of your approach to marketing. And the first of three on that list is the existing patients. That's, in my opinion, the most important piece of marketing collateral that you've got in your business, is the relationship that you've got with those existing patients. And so one of the first questions I'm asking a client is, show me your recall system, and also show me the other ways in which you maintain a relationship with those existing patients over the long term. So we pull the recall letter off the practice management software, and it's words to the effect of, we note from our records that it's time for your routine dental examination. Please give us a call. By the way, if you fail to attend, there'll be a penalty. Yours sincerely, the dental practice. It's like the world's worst Valentine's card. And these letters rattle themselves off the practice management software. And often, one of the team members will bring one of these letters in and put it down on the table. And the principal kind of blanches, looks over, reads the letter and goes, oh my God, and looks at me. And then says the classic words, I've not read that for the last 2 or 3 years. I didn't realise that that was going out. So your recall system is the first rung on the marketing ladder. And what we need to do is, and what I often do, is rewrite that recall letter in order to turn it into, let's call it, a dental's Valentine's card. And there are 5 points in that recall letter that need to be covered. Number one, thanks very much for being a patient of the practice. We appreciate your ongoing loyalty. Number two, it's time for your dental health review, healthy mouth assessment, healthy mouth review, whatever description you've got, not a routine examination. Number three, here's a list of the reasons why you should show up for your dental health review, why it's in your interest to do it. Number four, call to action, please give us a call, send us an email, go to our website, do whatever it is that you need to do in order to confirm or book that appointment. Number five, by the way, we're growing the practice at the moment. We'd love to see more new patients. We'd love to see more people like you because we like you. So if you've got any family, friends or colleagues that you think might be looking for a dentist or a dental practice, then please tell them about us because we've got some vacancies at the moment. And one of the things that I've got, and if anybody, you know, listening to this podcast wants to see some examples of recall letters that my clients use, no problem at all, send me an email, coachbarrow@me.com, and I'll happily share with you real life examples of those recall letters. So that's step one. Turn your recall system into a dental Valentine's card twice a year. Step two is, and the second most important part of your marketing activity, is word of mouth recommendation. Now everybody pays lip service to this. Oh yeah, 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 it's a great idea, Chris. Having people come in with a trusted recommendation from a mutual acquaintance is by far the best way to grow my business. And then I turn around and say, okay, well tell me then what your word of mouth protocols are, and they go and they blanch for the second time and say, well, we don't have any protocols, we just wait until happy patients automatically tell their friends, because that's what happens. We do get referrals, and I know you do, provided you don't hurt them or spit at them. If you do a good job, they are going to tell other people about you. By the way, they're not going to go in a wine bar on a Friday night and say, oh my God, you'll never guess, I went to the dentist on Tuesday, they've got a new 3D cone beam scanner. It's not going to happen. They're going to talk to their friends about the customer service experience that they've had, either good or bad. But word of mouth is a protocol. And again, one of the things that I share with my clients particularly is what I call an end of treatment protocol. That's a sit down face-to-face conversation that a patient would have either with a clinician or a treatment coordinator at the end of a course of cosmetic treatment. And again, I'm not going to script it here on the podcast, but bullet points. Number one, are you happy with the clinical outcome that we've delivered? Number two, are you happy with the customer service experience that you've had here at the practice? Number three, could we ask for your help? Yeah, of course you can. All right, first things first, we'd like to get some kind of online review because we've noticed that reviews are becoming a very important part in the way that customers do their research nowadays. So here is a little handout that says that if you've got a Gmail account, here's how to do a Google review for us. If you can't be bothered setting up a Gmail account, well, that's no problem. Here's how to do a Facebook review, or here's how to do reviews perhaps on some proprietary review sites like whatclinic.com or comparethetreatment.com or even NHS Choices for some people as well. So you've got to give the patient a kind of a little aid memoir to say this is how to do it. And again, for listeners, if you want a copy of an aid memoir, just send me an email. I'll share some of those that some of my clients are using. The next part of that end of treatment conversation, if they've agreed to the review, is to talk about testimonials. Now, if you were a patient, what I'd be saying is, Nigel, what we find is that 90% of the patients who get to the end of treatment with us don't like being on camera, either photograph or video. And so with those people, we would ask them to give us, if they could, either a written testimonial in the form of a letter or an email, if that's going to be easy for them to do. 10% of our patients can't wait to get in front of either a camera or a video camera. And for those people, what we do every 3 months is that we have a little video testimonial evening at the practice. We get two or three of those 10%ers in who've been through treatment in the last 3 months. We have a bit of cheese and wine and a laugh. And we literally take each of them and we do a little 3 minute video testimonial. What brought you to the practice in the first place? What was the customer service experience for you? What difference did the treatment make? Would you give any advice to anybody that was thinking about visiting this practice? So question is, Nigel, are you a 90%er or are you a 10%er? And whichever response you go the appropriate way. So that's a protocol. And what's important here is that you have a morning huddle in the practice where you're looking through the day list and you're saying, is anybody coming to the end of cosmetic treatment today? And if so, then who's going to be the designated person that's going to go in and have that end of treatment conversation with that patient so that we can expose ourselves to the risk of getting the reviews or getting the testimonial itself. And again, end of treatment protocol, I'll be happy to email to anybody. We've got it scripted out. So here's the story so far. Number one, make sure that you love your existing patients by having a very evocative recall system. Number two, make sure that you've got end of treatment protocols in place that are exposing you to the risk of word of mouth referrals. And we're now finally going to come to the third leg of the marketing stool, and that's how on earth do you find complete and utter total strangers to come in through the front door? And this is where I'm probably, there's a great book written by Seth Godin, the marketing blogger. He's written about 10 books, all of them are gold dust, but one of his books is entitled All Marketers Are Liars. So don't blame me, you know, it was Seth Godin that came up with that title. And of course, what he does go on to do is to explain that actually they don't set out to be liars, they just make promises that sometimes actually aren't fulfilled in reality because the customers are experimenting along with the marketer, if you see what I mean. So insofar as getting complete strangers in through the door, I'm going to give you a very quick list of things I believe in and things I don't believe in, right? I believe that a well-built, well-maintained website is mission critical to your marketing plan, because I believe that the majority of the patients that you want to see and want to treat are going to be doing website research on you before they actually come in through the front door. And that applies whether or not they've heard about you in a wine bar on a Friday night from a neighbour, whether they've seen your A-board on a pavement, whether they've heard an independent radio advert, whether they've just been Googling themselves. We all of us, don't we, nowadays, we do our initial retail research through a website, and that website has now effectively become the virtual front door of the practice for those strangers. So it's got to be great. And we definitely don't have time within the scope of this podcast to go into a list of things that your website ought to do. But those lists are available out there in the marketplace if you do a little bit of research. Particularly, I'm going to mention my friends at Dental Focus, because if you go to their homepage, Krishan Joshi and the team, they've actually got a list there of the 10 P's of website design. P for people, P for promises, P for prices, P for profile. And I think it's a really nice little aid memoir to get you going. But let me also say that, you know, they're not the only website developers in dentistry, and there's a lot of other great people that can build websites as well. I do believe that you've got to get your website right, and I wish I had the time to elaborate on that. I also believe in search engine optimization. I believe that it's important that somebody externally with the appropriate skill is able to optimize your site for organic search. And that, as we know, is a science unto itself. Sit down with a search engine optimizer and say, tell me what you do for a living. 5 minutes later, you wish you'd never asked the question because they speak in Mandarin or something. But actually, there are people out there that are brilliant at optimization. And boy, oh boy, is that a changing landscape, because Google are moving those goalposts in real time every single day of the week. And the job of the optimizer, it's a bit like being a surfer on a massive Hawaiian roller, which is that you've constantly got to get ahead of the wave and stay on the board. And that really, you know, I have people optimizing my site, and the people who can stay on that surfboard and keep on that wave, which of course never breaks, it just carries on rolling forever, they're the really clever guys. So I believe in websites, I believe in optimization. What I'm losing faith in, I'll be dead honest with you, I'm losing faith in paid for advertising on the internet. And when I say I'm losing faith, I don't mean that it doesn't work. If you throw money at Google, or if you throw money at Facebook, and if you do that through agencies that say that they can do that thing, then there is plenty of evidence around of three things. The first thing that there's plenty of evidence around is the fact that the bigger the check, the bigger the response. That really, what you put in and what you get out are directly related. Now, I've got friends in digital marketing, outside of dentistry, people that provide digital marketing services for e-commerce businesses, for example. And when you chat to these guys over a pint and say, well, what's your average customer investment? Nowadays, an e-commerce site, if we were making rucksacks or raincoats, we'd be spending 20 to 30 grand a month on digital marketing in order to create an online e-commerce store. And that actually, you know, online e-commerce is really what digital marketing is about. It's about getting people to buy your rucksacks or buy your raincoats or buy your Mojave slippers or whatever it is that you're trying to sell to them. And then the dentist turns up who's running a £500,000 practice and he says, well, you know, I'll go 500 a month. If you really put my arm up my back, I might be able to get to 1,000. And £1,000 goes off to an agency, and quite justifiably, 10 or 20% of that goes in agency fees. So you're down to a net £800 investment in Google or Facebook advertising. And it's like throwing a grain of sand into an ocean. Imagine how big the ripple is. But the interesting thing is that you're standing on the beach throwing your grain of sand in the ocean, and next to you there's some guy wants to sell rucksacks who's chucking boulders in the water next to you, and his ripple is much bigger than your ripple. So the first problem is quantity, volume of investment. And all right, there are some producer groups out there in dentistry that are amalgamating the resources, people that are doing short-term orthodontics, and there's 40 practices putting £1,000 a month each into a pool, and that 40 grand a month is being given to an agency and they're spending it, and of course that's a boulder going in the ocean, so it's creating a ripple. But the little guy who's trying to struggle by on 500 a grand a month, I think that we're seeing a law of diminishing returns. As the boulders get bigger and the water gets choppier, that grain of sand, nobody even notices it anymore. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is the quality, even if you do get a response, is the quality of the leads that are coming back. Now, don't shoot the messenger. Right, I'm 4 days a week on the road, I'm all over the flipping show, and I'm listening to people that are investing money into digital marketing, and here's what they pretty well all say: the quality of the leads is less than that which we are used to through our word of mouth systems and through our upselling systems. Now, part of that is self-evident, because your initial relationship with a stranger isn't going to be built on trust. And so the stranger's got to make a decision as to whether they're going to trust you, and you've got to make a decision as to whether you're going to trust the stranger. But actually, there's a deeper element to that, which is clients coming back to me and saying, yeah, but it's not just that. It's the fact that these people are price shoppers, they're bargain hunters, and they're messers. And there's nothing worse than going to your receptionist or your marketing champion and saying, right, we've just started paying for some paid media. Here's a list of names and numbers. Would you please stay behind a couple of hours tonight and ring all these people? Because they've all clicked on our Facebook advert for our tooth whitening offer. So we need you to ring through to them now and see whether you can pull some of them in for a consult. And your poor bloody receptionist or marketing champion is sitting on the phone ringing people at tea time who are going, Facebook ad? I never clicked on a Facebook ad. I don't know what you're talking about, love. Or, well, what's your price? 195 quid. You must be out of your mind. I can get it for £99 at Oasis, just down the road. So what's happening is the marketing champions are coming back and saying, I didn't sign up for this. If I wanted to sell double glazing, I would have gone and got a job with Everest. So that's the feedback that I'm getting. So I'm getting in a place now where I'm realizing that this whole digital marketing landscape is, can I say, it's a dangerous area for the little guy or gal to be getting involved in. And I'm not dissing every digital marketing agency in the world, but what I am saying, and I'm quite famous for saying this, is that what you've got to do is you've got to get your agency in a meeting once a month. You've got to sit face to face with them across the table in your practice, not on Skype. And you've got to look your agency rep in the eye, and you've got to ask them this hugely technical question: what have you done with my money? And then shut up and listen to the answer. And if the answer comes out in a language that you don't understand, and if they can't demonstrate a return on investment, you might be better advised investing some of that money into your word of mouth systems, because then you'll be dealing with people on third party trust. If the agency come back and say, well, here's a printout, here's the explanation of your Google Analytics, here's the explanation of all your Facebook ads, here's the number of leads that we supplied, here's the bounce rate on the website. If they come out with all the stats and say, well, listen, it's cost you 50 pence for each one of these leads. If your receptionist or your treatment card coordinator can't convert them, you've got a telephony problem, you've not got a digital marketing problem, then I'm okay with the explanation. What I get from the clients, though, we've been giving this agency money for a year, we never really talk, I've got no idea what my money's doing, I'm losing faith. Gosh, that was a mouthful, wasn't it? Sorry, but I hope it answers your question.
Thank you very much, Chris. That's a very comprehensive answer to the question. You've covered an awful lot of ground there. Going right back to the beginning of your answer, I was struck by the point that you made about the need to approach your recall letter as if it's a Valentine's Day card. And I think one of the things that it strikes me when I listen to that is that the points you were making about protocols and procedures and processes, I think, are absolutely right, because that's what will translate the ideas into action. But they need to be reviewed. So that original recall letter was probably totally appropriate when a practice was booked 3 months ahead and actually wanted to put some people off. But things change, things move on. What have you seen that's changed that leads you to think those are the killer things that people should be doing right now?
For me, Nigel, the thing that's changed the most is the patient. Patients, customers, you and I, all the people listening to this podcast, we are far, far more sophisticated buyers than we were 5 years ago. And we have been trained to use the internet to do our retail research. We are increasingly being trained to read reviews. And there is a review war going on at the moment between Google, Facebook, TripAdvisor, and other review sites. They're all trying to carve out market share, and perhaps come back to that in a minute. But the whole thing is that through the internet, through reviews, through social media, and also through simply the level of dental education now that exists in the media, it's become a subject that people talk about. We've even got 23 million people watching a YouTube video of a singing dentist or a rapping dentist. The whole public attitude towards buying things has changed in the last 5 years. And that applies, again, literally, whether we're buying a toaster, a pair of slippers, or professional or healthcare services. So the savvy consumer is doing their research. When I say the savvy consumer, there's probably an 80-20 rule. There usually is in life. And 80% of consumers probably aren't savvy. But the 20% who are savvy are the patients that we all want to see. And they are getting really clever. And not only are they clever at the research stage of their relationship with any new provider, including a dental practice, but they're equally clever during the patient experience. They know what good service looks and feels and sounds like. They actually also nowadays know what good dentistry looks and feels and sounds like, and they are more than ever inclined to give their feedback. You know, when I was a kid, and sadly that's a very long time ago, but every now and then back in the 1960s, my mum and dad would take me out for a lunch in a restaurant. Now, in the 1960s, lunch in a restaurant was a bit like going to be invested with a knighthood at Buckingham Palace. It was a big event. And I always remember, you know, when we went on holiday to Cornwall every single year and sat there in the rain for a fortnight wishing we were back at home, we'd go and have fish and chips at lunchtime, or we'd go out for a bite to eat in the evening. And if the customer service was rubbish, my mum and dad would turn round to me. I'd be sat there with a cold sausage on a fork, saying, "My sausage is cold." And my mum and dad would always say, "Don't make a fuss. Don't make a fuss." Because the British working class family had been taught not to make a fuss. So we just ate our cold sausages, paid the bill and left. And actually, British people were absolute suckers for lousy customer service. It was an easy mark. But of course, here we are 50 years later, and things have completely and utterly changed, and we're almost like kind of angry New Yorkers in the sense that if we don't get customer service, we're more than happy to give the feedback straight away. So that's the environment now in which we have to compete, as it were, with each other. And we also have to compete with all the other things people can spend the money on and say, okay, why? Number one, why should I spend my money on dentistry when I could buy an iPhone 7 or go on holiday? Number two, if I'm going to spend money on dentistry, why should I spend it with you? What is it that you're going to do that is going to make it worthwhile me making the effort to connect with you? And the fascinating thing, it absolutely fascinates me, is that if you can answer that question on the internet before the patient walks in through the door, picks the phone up or whatever, then it's half the battle done, isn't it? So actually, it's almost like you need people getting in touch with your front desk team and saying, I've had a recommendation from a neighbour of mine to say that you've looked after them famously. I've been and had a look at your website and it's amazing. I did actually connect with your social media channel, let's say Facebook, and I really like the stories that you're putting on there on Facebook. I feel as if I already know you and your core values and your culture, so when can we start? And so actually what you've got is it used to be get the hook in the customer and reel the customer in like a fighting fish and eventually land the customer in the net on the back of the boat. And I think the whole game has changed now, and you're in a situation actually where you want to create an environment where the fish are kind of like jumping out of the water and landing in the back of the boat and saying, where do we start? You know, bring the breadcrumbs. Yeah. Because they're ready to have a relationship with you. And that's a fascinating change. And it represents an opportunity for every dental practice to make the whole marketing actually a lot easier than it's ever been, frankly.
So is that the essence of what people should be doing right now, is actually thinking very much about the fact that patients' attitudes have changed, the way they consume things has changed. Actually, does my website suit that changing way of purchasing?
Exactly things? Right. There's a thing that the inbound marketing people talk about, buyer personas, which is a very buzzy kind of phrase at the moment out there. And a buyer persona means that it's imagining all of the habits, behaviours and preferences of your perfect customer. And so sometimes it's really interesting. You know, a client turns around to me and says, I want to grow the implant side of my business. And my response to that is, no, you don't. What you need is you need more people coming in through the door that want to buy implants off you. And so as opposed to everybody else, they can buy implants off. And so really what we don't need to be having a conversation about how do we tell people that we do implants. We need to be having a conversation about who do you want, what type of patients do you want coming in to buy implants from you, and what are their buying habits, what are their cultural preferences, how do they move through life, and how is what you do going to synchronize with the way that they do what they do.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Chris. It's been absolutely fascinating talking to you today. And I've got a feeling we could talk for hours and hours on this subject. So maybe we'll revisit some of these topics in greater detail in future podcasts.
Thanks, Nigel. Anytime.
Thank you very much for your time today, Chris. Cheers.